why the hip hop music has such an effect on the youth is because for a lot of people growing up in poverty, poverty forces you to cry out.
You plug in work from a drug dealer whose name is knowledge.
We not God. Black men not God. It's only one God. That's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Ooh.
And his son, Jesus Christ. That's weird. Because I'm like, well, how you know that? Yo, what's going on, people? Welcome to another episode of Yastas Podcast. Yo, tonight it's going to be special. Well, every time is special, right?
Special.
What's up, my bro? How you doing?
Good. Special Ed.
Well, yo, check this out. You know it's always mobbing, you know. And today is the first episode, bro, that we're going to have someone from the mob.
Ooh, nice.
All the way from Buffalo. My brother drove down. He didn't drive down specially for the podcast. I mean, if he would have done it, that would have been just a little too much. You know what I'm saying? But he's knocking a few birds with one shot. You know what I'm saying? But, hey, without further ado, man, let's give a welcome to my brother, Zadok, that God Hop MC, y'all.
Salute to you, man. How you doing?
I'm good. You know what? Can I get jumped in? Hog Mob, can I get jumped in?
Yeah. We got the oil.
What needs to happen, bro? I got oil downstairs.
Hey, we need to waterboard him with oil.
I got the castor oil downstairs.
We ain't gonna let you drink it this time,
bro. Hey, you know what though? A fun fact. I thought you can use any oil, right? So we use cooking oil,
motor oil.
Yeah, every type of oil. I don't know about the castor oil, bro, but I'm talking about like any oil, because you know what, we've been in positions, bro, when you didn't have that special olive oil, right? And we used to be like, find whatever you got in the kitchen, pray over it, you know.
Slap them in the head with that Johnson's. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Oh, man, just to let y'all know, to get it in context, we were just talking about my brother's experience when he was a baby in the faith, talking about oil, and he was demon-possessed and taking shots of oil, you know what I'm saying? Like, being a bartender, you know, a bartender, so I'd be like, hey, boom, here's a shot of oil, get that anointing going.
Bro. My mom, I was all bubbling up with pimples from drinking all that oil.
She's like, boy, all that saturated fat, you take it in.
Saturated fat,
I just want to touch you on your head with it. What are you doing?
Oh, hey, thank God you didn't get a heart attack, bro.
But, bro, the sweat and the oil, bro, were not mixed, bro. They were just like separation.
Oh, man. This
man, we're so happy to have you, bro. So happy.
I appreciate y'all inviting me, bro.
Thank you for yesterday. We had a little moment at the little concert. Amen. I don't want to use the word little, but at the spot, my son, Benji, I don't know if you remember, came up to you. Benji's like, hey, man, you're so big. And the first thing he said was like, not as big as your heart. And Benji was like, whoa. You know, he thought about it. He was like, whoa. Because Benji, man, he's animated. Oh, so thank you for that.
No, praise God.
Yeah.
I seen his energy and he was like, hey, and he's like, hey, man, I love you. And shook my hand, man, you're so big. Not as big as your heart.
Not as big as your
heart.
How
big are you, though? People can know.
Well, I'm 6'4".
Okay.
Just 200 pounds, you know what I'm saying? I'm a slim Jim,
you know
what I'm
saying?
I'm tall, you know, tall guy, you know what I mean? And I don't mean that just because I'm tall, I'm a basketball player or something like that, you know?
But you is.
You know what I mean? I did a little something back in my day, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, man, I appreciate y'all brothers for inviting me here, man.
Oh,
you know,
man.
And may the Lord use it just to help further,
amen,
which I got going on here.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you're the first Hulk Mob member to be part of the podcast, bro. So, yeah, it's actually Tay's. It was Tay's turn, but I had to say, hey, yo, Tay, we you know, Zay is going to be up in the town.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to take
it. Yeah, take it. He can pull up on you when you need
anytime,
to, God.
Anytime. But, yo, bro, we want to start off with your story.
Okay.
You know, your upbringing, how you, you know, how you was living in the world. Mm. And then when God showed up, pull you out.
Mm. Well, I mean, just know, I'll give you the condensed version.
Yeah, of course.
Because whatever the story is, sin is involved. You feel me?
Facts.
I grew up Eastside Buffalo, East Buffalo, New York, born and raised. My mom had me in her mid-teens, you know what I'm saying? And my father, unfortunately, wasn't able to be manly enough and mature enough to step up and just be a father full time. And so, unfortunately, probably by the time, from what I was told, by the time I was probably about 2 years old, he was no longer in my life. You know what I'm saying? And because of this, I grew up with a weird thing happening. On one hand, my mom did meet a man who she fell in love with and married. And he raised me ever since I was probably about 3 or 4 years old. My stepfather, may he rest in peace. And I always felt like I had a father. But you get to that moment in time where the adults reveal to you that the person who you call dad, he's your father, but he's not your biological father. And that's a thing for a kid, you know, because by the time that I was maybe what, by the time I was probably turning about 9 years old, 8 or 9, him and my mom start producing children together. So when he met my mom, it was me and my little sister. And then they had 2 daughters together, my younger sisters. And so you start to understand that, hey, this man loves you. He takes care of you and you call him dad all of your life. And so it's something, it does something to you because when you're told this isn't your quote unquote real father, it's like, what you mean? Like, no, he's right there. He is real. Yeah. That's really my dad. But they start to explain to you and you don't really comprehend it, but you understand they're letting you know he's your dad, but yet in a way he's not. And so growing up, by the time I got into adolescence, their relationship was floundering for bad reasons. And so by the time I turned 12, I was going into the 6th grade, him and my mom separated. And I'll never forget, you know, it was things happening in the home between them, unfortunately, for some time. And I just remember one morning getting woke up by my mom. It's probably like a Saturday or something. We get woke up and she's like, hey, get up, come in the living room, you know, put your stuff on, you know, go in the bathroom, wash your face or whatever. Here, cereal already made. And she woke me and my sisters up. And so we're sitting there eating, and while we're eating, there's a moving van outside. And I noticed some of my uncles and them and some of their friends, they coming in and they just taking our furniture and stuff out the house. And that was weird to me. I'm like, Mom, what's happening? And she was like, we moving, just hurry up and finish your stuff, this, that, and the third. So to make that story shorter, I understood later on after it was done, my mother just left. He went to work. He was a security guard at a Catholic hospital. And so she just chose, I guess, one of the weekends where he was going to work a double. He gone for 16 hours. That's all the time she need to move. So when he came home, probably that Sunday morning, he walked into a house with just his belongings, his bed, and whatever things she felt belonged to him. But all of our beds and a little bit of furniture and kitchen stuff was gone.
Let me ask you something. What did that do to you emotionally? Like, going back to knowing that wasn't your real father, like, what was that impactful?
It was, because while you can be told someone isn't biologically your father, you start to understand it. By the time I'm 12, I understand what that means. But outside of that statement, the reality is this is my father. You understand what I'm saying? I love this man. I call him dad. Anything I've done, he the one taught me to play ball. He the one who wanted to toughen me up. And so brought me boxing gloves and he would smack me around.
He invested time in you.
You know what I'm saying? And so It's stuff like that. He cleaning his car on a Sunday and got me helping him, and we spend that time. And when he go to do things, he take me with him. And so
you bonded, really, you connected.
Oh no, bro! Ever since I had memory, if he been around since I was 3 or 4, my earliest memories involve him.
Yeah.
And so them separating for me, my mom and my family is messed up right now, broken, and I'm losing my father. That's the impact. There is nothing lessening. I don't have, oh, well, it ain't working out between them, but I got my real dad or something. No, 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 no. He is dad in every way for me. And so them separating, bro, and now we live separately from him. And for the first time in my life, we live in the projects. We used to live in a house with 3 bedrooms and a bathroom and a backyard. Now we live in the projects in apartment C. And, it was about 2 months before he found us, and we were literally just a half a mile from him in the projects, but he had to do his investigating to find out where we were. And I'll never forget all of that went through. And so by the time I was about 14, they were fully divorced. And so now I don't get to really spend no time with him. I only see him when he come and pick up my little sisters. That's when I felt he wasn't my father. Because their situation,
the separation,
caused the separation, where it's not that he didn't say hi and bye, or if my birthday came, he didn't give me gifts, but that time that I had with him, like when he came and got my sisters, because they're his daughters and there's divorce and there's visiting rights and all kind of stuff involved that I wouldn't know at the time, he's not saying, yo, come with me. Mm. And so now the reality is, damn, that's their dad. He's my stepdad. I'll forever love him, but he's not my father. And now for the first time in my life, I'm entering adolescence, this part of my life, without him around every day. And it started to get real. And I only had me, because my mom didn't have no biological sons. I'm her only biological son. It's my 3 sisters. And now where I done lived somewhere, I probably only lived 2 places the whole time they were together. Now that my mom is fended for herself financially and she got all 4 of us full time, almost every other year we live somewhere else, bro. And I started to understand my city in a way I didn't before, because now, just when I'm getting used to a place, we moving again.
That happened to me.
And I have to.
That happened to me.
Yeah. So you know what that means. Yes. I don't know if you had some.
You can't make. Some male, I mean, you make friends and then you say bye to your friends. It's like, it's weird. But you kind of get used to it.
Yeah.
And it's not something positive to get used to, but you learn how to not to adapt, like not to fall in love with your neighbors.
Yeah.
Not to fall in love with your neighborhood.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but you move and you know, you can't get attached to anything. But why did your mom kind of like flee? Was it like an abusive relationship?
Yeah. They
because, had, you know, for her to sneak away. Because that's what my mom did, too.
They had a lot of stuff.
My mom did that.
There was abuse there.
Okay.
And there was abuse on both sides. And I think, and I don't know all the details, but you just know what you see. And so if a man looks aggressive to a female and you see her be aggressive back, all you know is they get into fights and they argue and cuss each other out. You don't know why. You don't know who started it. We don't know what's happening until voices raise. So as kids, we don't have no judgment on who's right and wrong. We just know it's wrong.
And you see the most aggressive one, like, oh,
yeah,
dad's the most aggressive, or mom's the most aggressive.
Sometimes it could be her.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it could be him. And when children should not hear their parents degrade one another out the mouth, and they shouldn't see them fight one another. We saw that, bro. And that did something to us. And I know to my sisters, it made them violent. I grew up with sisters. I didn't have no brothers, but you know what's wild? I grew up in a time where, because of my status and I got into the streets and stuff, and I was the guy, I got a crew. I had dudes who, my sisters would get in fights and they'll fight men. And I have dudes, they wouldn't put their hand on my sister. I got guys coming to the block like, yo, man, get your sister, bro. My sister done beat a dude under the car, homie. And honestly, I don't think that
my sister
just
got hands too.
Yeah, but I don't think that is that every man can't just fight back. Because of the neighborhood we in and because of who I was starting to be, they didn't
want I get it.
Yeah. Issues with me. Because if she, but then this is the thing. I'm a diplomat. You know what that moving from one place to another also did? And I don't have no backing. I have to always come somewhere and create my circle or join what's already created. I had to learn to be a diplomat everywhere I went. I had to sit and watch and find out who's the bullies, who's the funny guy, who's the quiet guy, who's the sneaky guy, who's the kind one. Everywhere I went, and then I had to introduce myself, or if I get walked up on and I get treated a certain way, I had to actually learn to stand up. And once, and shout out to my homie Willie, he said, man, once you get forced to stand up, it's not easy to stand down.
Oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm not a bully. I'm not a tough guy. I'm not a super goon or nothing. But you got to learn to survive. And I think that that stuff actually helped me in one way, even on this side of things now, because it's a part of my development. Okay. Our present is nothing but a result of all of our past. Even our coming to Christ and the Lord pulling us to him and showing us we belong to him and us repenting of sin, that's still part of our past. When we look to the story of Christ and we read the Holy Scriptures, we're looking in the past. Everything that has happened up to this point makes us who we are. And so even though I've done some things I'm not proud of, I've done things that I won't tell people. Maybe if I've told anyone some of them things, maybe her. Mm-hmm. But some things I haven't even told her. Mm-hmm. Because, and when I say her, y'all, it's my wife. But don't put her on camera. She gonna get on me if y'all do all that. So
the camera doesn't move. Don't worry.
The camera don't move. Okay. If you move, we'll get you. So what that does, bro, is as I was moving to these different places, I had to learn things. And there was a lot of things that scared me because whenever things happened, my mom is there and she's a tough woman, but Pops was always there. He was always there, and he a big black man with a pistol, and you know what I'm saying? And he's known, he has a reputation from his high school days, and so you just have that male protection. I just think that when young men and women who grow up with their mothers don't have their fathers around, I think that there's some things that will try to supplement that we're not ready
100%
for. But the male part of us will kick in naturally. There's something in women, whether they're adult women or even young women, when they get pregnant, you could see a girl who out of control. She could be smoking and drinking, 16 years old. She could find out she's pregnant. And if she gonna keep that baby, God willing, something happens and she just go cold turkey on vices and other things because something is growing in her and there's something that could turn on in a young woman and she automatically is being pushed into another phase of life.
Facts.
It happens to us too, but not because we birth children, but because out in the world, testosterone and sin create conditions that you either gonna eat or you gonna get ate and you gotta make a decision. And I made some decisions.
Bro, did your mom ever talk about God?
No.
Yeah. Mine neither.
My grandmother did. My mother never talked about God. My grandmother did. You know, may I pray that she stand on the right hand of the Son in the kingdom because she was one of them ones in my life. And
shout out to grandmas.
My mother's mother.
Those prayer warrior grandmas, man.
My grandmother. Barbara Jean Harris. You know what I'm saying? Yo, she was the one who broke me out of calling my mother by her name. Because I didn't know this, but I used to spend so much time with my grandmother because my mother had me when she was 17. So my mom still got to go to school. She's a young lady, and I'm her only child.
She's maturing as a person, and as a mother, man.
And her mother, my grandmother, is going, and she lived with my mother, my grandma. So I spent a lot of time with my grandmother and my uncles because my mom lived there. And so they told me, they told me, they said, we had to beat it out of you that you couldn't call your mother by her name because that's what everybody in the house called.
Yeah. Was that her nickname or her real name?
No, her real name.
Her real name.
Her real name. And because I got too much respect for her, I'm not even going to say it on camera. She'll see this and be like, boy, didn't I tell you when you was 3 years old? Don't call me my name. So what I'm saying is that I called my mother by her name.
Yeah.
Because every time she come in the house, Yeah. Everyone says her name. So I would say a mix of mom and her name. But she come in and everyone to say hi. And I would say hi. Hi, your name. And it started to bother her a lot. And my grandmother told her, what do you expect? He's with us all the time. And you got to go out here and still get your life together. So, you know, this, that, and the third. That's the impact my grandmother had as the glue of the family. And my mother was that for us, too. And a lot of women, no matter the ethnicity, women who don't have a lot of men that stay loyal enough to be around, they become our glue. And so my grandmother was that. And she was the one who was into the Bible.
Was Grandpa
so
there?
We Grandpa? Heard about it.
Grandpa was there?
Yes.
Okay.
But ironically, not my mother's biological father, her husband who took care of my mom and her brothers and them, he was there. I remember him all my life. And what was interesting was, I'll never forget, when I was about 10 years old, I remember him saying, he said, who's the most powerful black man in the world? I'm sitting there.
Oh, like, I love this question.
I'm trying to think. I'm like, Frederick Douglass.
Buster Douglas.
Marcus Garvey. Douglas. Sugar Ray Leonard.
For real.
Know, because I'm...
Mike Tyson wasn't around not yet.
He said, Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I was like,
who's that?
First of all, the name was
Farrakhan.
What kind of name is that? And he sat me down and he showed me who Farrakhan was. And so at 10 years old, that was a pivotal moment in my life. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it until later that was a pivotal moment in my life.
Is that a Muslim movement?
That's the Nation of Islam. Right. Minister Louis Farrakhan was the second after the founder, Elijah Muhammad, died. You know, the whole Malcolm X thing and all that. If Malcolm would have lived, he probably would have became the leader. But Malcolm was assassinated, and so Louis Farrakhan became the leader.
Bro, why can't in the Mexican culture we come up with names like that, bro? We're all Jose's, bro.
Check this out. What do you call two Mexicans playing basketball, bro?
I don't know, bro. If I don't know, do I lose my card?
Nah. Juan on Juan.
One on one, Juan on Juan.
Bro. That's racist, ain't it? That's your people, though. So you can't even say it. That is one bro, on one.
Juan.
I'm going to try to use that.
I stole that one. You know, I actually saw it on Wild.
That's a layup right there.
Wild Out.
That's a layup.
But, bro, so when was the moment when you found Christ? Because I know you started a battle rap group, right? Or you started seeing, like, well, before we get into the Christ thing, like, how did you get into the rap scene? How did that start?
This is ridiculous. Now, I didn't grow up with my biological father. I've never even met him. But some of the nature of who produces you will be in you naturally, I guess, to some degree. You can, you know, it's a DNA thing or whatever. My father was a very talented individual from what I'm told. And the reason, I guess, my mama met him, probably being out there in places she shouldn't be, and met this guy who's 18, 19, and he's a well-known lead singer in an R&B group.
Nice.
At the time, in the late 70s, going into the 80s. And at this time, in Buffalo, New York, he was one of the top singers and one of the top groups in the city. And there was another group that they competed with all the time, and all the talent shows and all the stuff that would happen in the city, because you got New York with Harlem, and then Buffalo, New York was the next stop. Anything come out of New York City, all the bands, all the music, it come to Buffalo first and then spread out to the Midwest. And so, you know, there's a guy, some y'all might have heard of this guy. His name is Rick James. Rick James in the Stone City Band is Buffalo, New York legend, royalty.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yeah. And my father was Rick's competition.
What?
Rick had the best band in the city, the Stone City Band, legendary. And Rick is a great songwriter, composer, and entertainer. But Rick is not a natural singer. But my father and his group were. They're that Boys to Men
where
Rick James is more like that Keith Sweat. Not the greatest singer, but talented enough to hold his tone, create the music, produce and everything. So Rick leaves Buffalo, comes out to California, pursuing his career. My dad and him stayed local legends. Well, we see who became well known. So even though I didn't know that man, that I guess was in me, because ever since I was young, singing, dancing, poetry was a part of my natural thing. I would sit and write stuff when I was 6, 7 years old just to express myself. Yeah. I'm the guy who sat in the house and would play all of my mother and my grandmother and aunts and uncles' records. And while the record is playing, I'm looking at the record cover, because you remember them days.
Oh,
record
yeah,
covers.
Yeah, yeah.
You're reading the record cover, listening to the artist, and I learned to mimic the voices of the artist the best I can. Just doing this on my own. And by the time I was 12 and hip hop is blowing up in New York, I remember my cousins and them, they had their father brought them these turntables and stuff, and you'd be at their house in the summer, and in the middle of their block, they would set this stuff up, run plugs out the window, and scratch and mix and play the keyboard.
That's
and
so dope.
From the community is so just dope. Out there rapping, and I don't know how to do that. I want to do that. And at the time, I'm 12, and I'm like, yo, can I go? And I'll never forget. Rest his soul. My cousin Yusef was like, man, you don't know how to rap, man. You don't need to. That offended me. So when we left, I went home and wrote a rap.
You remember it?
No. I know it was about Sunkissed Orange Soda.
That's dope.
What do I know?
Yeah. Talk about all the sugar. The sugar got you high.
Right. But it wasn't long. Maybe it was 6 bars. You know, I know what bars are. But when we went back maybe 2 weeks later, because my mom would spend a lot of time over there in the summer, and they doing it again. And I'm like, yo, let me on. And they like, boy, you can't rap. I say, yo, I got one. And I showed them the paper. And my cousin looked at it and said, he reading it, and I guess he could see the rhyming word at the end of the sentence. And he like, this yours, you wrote? I said, yeah. He said, okay, we going to give you a shot. Man, the whole neighborhood standing there watching me. And they a few minutes later, they let me go up and do my quick little.
If you remember, that's crazy.
No, it's not that. I ain't no joke, but I know it was a Rakim beat.
Okay.
Yo, they put that on, and I did. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, and just did my 6 bars. Man, it was all like, all right, I'm done. I'm gone. I'm turned out now. I'm the best thing in the world to me. I'm not, but to me. Yeah. And so from that time, y'all, I went home. And I just started more and more and more. And I would listen to songs and see how long they were. And I would try to hear a little point. So I'm like, okay, you got to have a part you repeat. I don't know what they call that, but you got to have a part you repeat. Just and then you got to have the pieces in between. And that's how it started for me, bro. And by the time I was 16 in high school, we battled on the back of the bus. We battled in the lunchroom, all of that. And that's when I learned how to... I had to beat on the table and do my rap. You know what I'm saying?
That's the different talent right there.
You know. They call me Zay, and I don't play. From around the way. And we doing this, and that just turned me out. And so now, by the time I'm in my senior year in high school, there's a movement in my city of all of these rappers from different neighborhoods who come into this big meeting. And I didn't know the meeting they were having, but my guy, who was a well-known battle rapper named Slice, salute to Slice and my guy Malek, they was like, yo, come to this thing we going to on a Saturday. So I just went with him. I didn't know what it was. We go to my man's house, my man Ike Nice. He lives in Toronto now, big time DJ out there. In his house, it's about 30 guys in there. I don't know too many of these guys. I may recognize two others. They were having a meeting about starting a big rap group that represent Buffalo, because they wanted the best rappers to come together, form a super group, and try to get a record deal. And they were going to name it, and they coming up with all these ideas. And I'll never forget, they settled on the name Upstate Entertainment. And this was 1995, bro. And I'm in there and I'm like, yo, this is fire. And so I'm talking to Slice and I'm like, yo, so y'all gonna be in it and this, that, and the third? They like, yeah, that's why we here. And so, you know, weed is in the air, Beats is playing. And I'll never forget, I'm sitting here with guys and we smoking and doing whatever. And my man Slice, they was in the kitchen rapping and playing dice. And he came out the kitchen and came over to me and bent over. And he said, hey, I'm gonna go at you, so be ready. I said, huh? It caught me off guard for it. He said, I'm gonna go at you, be ready. He was like, come on. So I'm like, okay. So I get up and I come into the kitchen. So they in there rapping. So they just down the third. And so he just jump in the cypher. It's about probably 11, 12 guys rapping. And he jump in the cypher and he just start rapping. And guys, is this, that, and the third. But now I understood what he said. Because in the middle of his rap, he walked out of the circle. Imagine a kitchen this big. And it's like 12, 15 guys are here in the circle. Smoking, playing dice, and they rapping. And he rapping in the middle. And guys, and he turned and walked to me. And set, finished like his last 6-7 bars of his rap in my face. I'm like, yo, and the guys don't know what's going on because don't none of them know me, but he know me, and now I know why he brought me here.
Passed you the mic.
He passed me the mic, and he already know we're at home. We go at each other all the time. I said, oh. Man, I stepped right in that floor. I ain't even let him finish. As he's stepping back from me, I'm stepping in his face, waiting to the middle. And now I'm spitting. And the whole room got quiet. And it was like, after I finished, the whole room, the whole kitchen go,
oh! No!
And he slapped me up. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, they like, yo, son, like, yo, who your man? What's his name? And at that time, they called me Torture. That was my rap name.
Torture.
Yeah, Torture.
Oh, I like it.
Torture. And he was like, yo, this is my man Torch. They was like, yo, son, you nice. Like, yo, but hold on. Like, you gonna have to spit something else. You'll change the beat. So they changed the beat, made me spit something else. Do you know they made me rap like 5 more times by myself? And from that time when they formed that, every 2 weeks they had a meeting at this big park called Maston Park. It's right in the middle of a neighborhood called the Fruit Belt, because all the streets is named after fruit. And so that neighborhood is called the Fruit Belt. And they put the word out every 2 weeks, every second and fourth Saturday we hear. And if you want to join this movement, come. But I didn't know this was going to happen. They said, if you going to join, you got to battle who we tell you to battle. So dudes was coming from all over the city and would just come up on bikes, walk up the block, come in their cars, and they would come into the park. And we'd be in a park 50, 60 deep. And they got the boom box. And they like, yo, so you trying to be down? Like, yeah, I'm from, what hood you from? All right. Do you know? I'm just standing there, bro. I done walked up here. We got 2 pit bulls with us, me and my man. And they like, hey, Torch, you up? I was like, what you mean? They was like, yo, dude said he want to join the group. Battling. I destroyed the dude.
Oh.
And from that time, for that whole summer, for 3 months, that was basically 6 meetings. Whoever came to the park had to battle. Let's just say ain't nobody get in the crew.
I was going to say it was a one-man crew after that.
If you see how set up, that's my old pride kicking in. I rebuke you. I rebuke that old spirit.
But what motivated you, bro, during that time? What motivated you to write?
Expressing myself. When you grow up without other men around like that, and you also are seeing whatever you're seeing happening around you, there's a way that you want to express yourself. Some people go out, start fights. Some people, they into sports, this, that, and the third. And my mom didn't have all the money in the world to put me in things that I could be as a young man running around getting my testosterone out in aggression, but rapping against another person. And when I heard LL, I'm bad, and then, you know, Kumo D, Wild Wild West, and then here come NWA, and I, you know, respect the movement, but Ice Cube was that guy to me, him and MC Ren. And when I heard them, and then when Ice Cube broke off NWA and went solo, and I heard that first record, everything was aggressive. And so I was learning to become aggressive with expressing myself, because I'm not naturally an aggressive person, like I'm all in your face. But when it's time to rap, I'm going to be Mike Tyson. And so that really was my motivation. It gave me an opportunity. But another thing, it actually ingratiated me to neighborhoods. And this ain't back then in the late 90s. It's not now. A neighborhood will probably have two or three guys in the whole neighborhood who are the rappers. If you were a rapper, you were special. Everybody don't rap, just like everybody don't make beats. It's not like today. I became any neighborhood I moved in, because by the time I moved to some neighborhoods, I had a reputation as a rapper. Once dudes heard me, oh, that's him. Oh, I heard of you. He nice. And they have me battle whoever in their neighborhood already supposed to be good. And there were some other good guys who was like, I never really lost. It would just be like you just met other really good dudes. And so now we tight. And so now in this neighborhood, for four blocks this way, two blocks this way, and three blocks in either direction is our hood. And if you come over here and you want to rap, you're going to battle Torch or you're going to battle such and such. And bro, without being a drug dealer, without being a shooter, a stick-up kid, I was known in every neighborhood as the battle rapper. And that really gave me another way to be known in my city, be known in my hood, respected, and at the same time, do something that I really thought, yo, if I get good at this and I could get a record deal, I could get rich and I could take care of my mom and I can move us out the hood, like that, bro.
Let me ask you this, bro. Would you say that that's what is the common denominator in a lot of athletes? You know, in our ethnicity is a lot of boxing, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of black dudes and different kind of sports and music. Mm-hmm. Would you say that the absence of the father, or sometimes even an abusive father, or an abusive father, male figure, is what triggers that really a way to release that frustration, that anger? It could be like, you know, like you said, music or sports or boxing. Would you say that's what it is?
I would say I believe a big part of it. Not to say somebody who didn't come from privilege and money can't be talented in those arenas, but most of the people who you see rise to the top, when you listen to their stories, when I listen to Manny Pacquiao's story, when I listen to who I think is probably a top five in my book, if not top 10 in most books, fighter of all time, Chavez, bro.
Oh, yeah.
The way he abused human beings' bodies. Bro, him and Ray Leonard and them guys. If you
just
look
to
at
let
all
you know, my
story,
last name is Chavez, bro. Just to let you know.
Oh, my bad.
No, you're playing.
Yeah,
no, you're playing.
But not related, though.
My dad was super prideful, bro. He would like lie to people in front of me, like, "Oh, we're Chavez's family." I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah." No. And when we go home, he's like, "No, bro." I was gonna say something real quick. You know, it brought me an image back. I know it brought me an image back to the moment when you're. Your dad, we'll just say that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't your biological father, but your dad would come in, pick up your little sisters, and he would be like, "Not you."
Yeah, and he didn't say not me.
Right. But the action, right?
The action says not me.
So, you know, it's almost like, who's going to get our attention first? You know, I didn't grow up with a dad. So it's like, it's almost, who's going to get my attention first? And luckily for you, it was music. You know, because how am I going to stand out? How are people going to accept me? Because just like your dad, when he would show up and he didn't say it, but he did it, right? He was like, "Not you," or "Not today," or whatever. Yeah. And getting pushed away, you know, it builds like low self-esteem. You know, not having two parents in your house, you know, God's strategy works. Oh, yeah. You know, his strategy of having a mom and a dad, having those two figures and them trying to work it out and creating a family. Yeah, like, bro. Man, God's strategy works. And my condition was the same thing. I fell in love with music real young because that was like, whoa, I understand it and it understands me. That's when I would move to neighborhoods. I would always look up to the older folks, like, because they would accept me. And now, like, this new generation, who's going to catch their attention first? You know,
it's going to be who they think they can be.
Yeah.
Because one thing about music artists or an athlete or a boxer, I can run, I can jump, I can learn to fight, or I already know how to fight. Wait, hold on. I can say that. I can be like that guy. And when you don't have a man in the house, something masculine is going to talk to you. And so when I seen, and this is the late 80s going into the 90s, people can laugh at it and they probably may not understand why, even though it's on a much larger scale today, why the hip hop music has such an effect on the youth is because for a lot of people growing up in poverty, poverty forces you to cry out and you have to express yourself. Some cats cry out in a boxing gym. Some cry out running as fast as they can on a football field, bumping bodies, sweating and conditioning themselves in the basketball court, the baseball field, or the soccer field, or in the music studio.
That makes sense.
You understand bro. What yeah. I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, men can talk to you. This is why the way we look, the slang we develop, even our taste today, you know, I mean, if you look at me, I still dress like I'm from the 2000s or something, because what them guys said on them records, hey, this is the shoe you want to put on. This is the jacket to get. If you get a car, this the car you want to drive. If you want a girl, this is what she should look like. Hey, you smoke? Oh, you don't smoke? Well, when you get ready to smoke, this is what you smoke. Do you drink? Oh, you don't? Well, when you get ready to drink, this is the liquor. And by the time you get out there and you like, okay, I got to find that stuff, another person comes along who seems to be more popular and they like, no, this is what it is now. This the chain you wear. This is the brand. No, we not wearing jerseys no more and baggy jeans. We rock stars. Our jeans are going to be tighter. We wearing white tees now. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we driving foreign vehicles. I would be happy if I got a damn Ford Taurus.
I don't know.
If I could get a car. But focus, as soon as I get a Ford Taurus, this dude talking about like, yo, you want a Benz?
Hey, we need a Ford Taurus.
I don't think people know what a Ford Taurus is.
They don't know what that is.
My mom had one, bro.
I wanted a car. I'm like,
that thing was brown, bro. Ford Taurus. My mom had one, bro. And the tin was purple because we got it done in Mexico. You know what I mean? The tin was purple. But the first gear was black. We're like, oh, this is fire. And then a week later, it was purple.
Well, that's how a culture gets created, right? Like, the influence of... But music is powerful.
It is.
How I started rapping, bro, is... I remember my pops was living in Esco. That's where Ivy's from.
Oh, is that... Yeah. Was that Escondido?
Yeah. Yeah, we was living in these apartments. They're well known for... You know, drug dealing and all that stuff. Like, there's gangs out there. But I remember I used to have this co-worker, and she lived right across the apartment complex.
Did you say co-worker?
Yeah. And she lived across the complex. And I always see, like, these brothers, you know what I mean? These black cats kicking it with her, right? And she would invite me over. Like, hey, you should come kick it. I was like, all right. So I went over there. These dudes smoking weed and all that. And then I saw they had a little home studio. This is back in, like, 2000, bro.
And when they had Napster?
I saw these dudes. They had a little keyboard, and they had the mic in the closet. I saw these dudes, like, putting down tracks and all that. And I was like, what? I said, I thought it was only, like, Snoop and Dre and all them cats. And then they started telling me, like, nah, bro, like, they're just their cats. It's just like us, bro. You know what I'm saying? But they just, you know, they made it. I was like, oh, okay. So that's what, like, caught my interest. I go, oh, so these dudes can do it. That means I can do it, right? So then I started paying attention how the rhyme structured and all that. So that's how I started rapping, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's crazy how
you
that
can
works.
Rap, bro.
Huh?
Bro, he can freestyle too. Skills. He doesn't say it, but I want to see if y'all can do a little better.
I go to Spanish, right?
Hey, bro, so when was that moment? So you go to high school, so you start a rap and you go to high school. When is that time when Jesus comes, bro, and you start changing your lyrics?
That doesn't come until after the street life. Rap gets bigger and street money makes you bigger.
So you start making money.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Because poverty pushed me there. And I'll say this. I won't be fake and say it was the only choice. It was the only one I made.
Oh.
Because at the end of the day, in that same hood.
Say that again.
It wasn't the only choice. if I want to be honest, it was the only choice I made.
Poof.
And I got nice. And the only reason I'll be honest is because at the same time, at the same age, growing up in the same conditions, same family structure, if you will, I got a cousin who will go to we in high school, and when he get out of school, he willing to go to the supermarket to his job. And at that time, if you got permission from your parents, if you weren't over 18 yet, you could actually work a certain amount of hours legally, but you can't work past that because you're under 18. But he went through that and did that. And so he's going to work Monday through Friday, 4 hours a day with his little 20-hour a week job. And that's how he get his money. That's not enough for me. But I could have made that choice too. And so at the end of the day, I just want to be transparent. I think one of the falsities in coming out of the black community, but I would think it's probably the same in y'all community when guys get into drugs and stuff and be like, it was the only thing I saw. No, it wasn't. That wasn't the only thing you saw.
That's true.
Because I got an uncle. I saw guys in the street who was tough and this, that, and the third, and you see him get into gunplay or they get into the hand game, and you know what I mean? But you also got that uncle who work at Chevy, at the Chevy plant or something, or he work for a construction company, and he's part of the family in the neighborhood and community too. And he come home in his pickup truck and get out with his boots on and in his lunch pail. And that same dude who sell drugs around the corner, that's his brother or that's his cousin. And then when you see them get into it and argue with each other, and we family, and I don't care you sell drugs around the corner, you already know what's up. Say something else again, and it's on. You don't, and I see you back down from him. He's tough too. That working man, that's your family member, he's tough when he need to be too. It's just about choices. We in the same community. You feel what I'm saying? So it's just the choice I made, bro. Because at the end of the day, some of the vanity of wanting the finer things and wanting to get as much money as quick as possible, it seemed like out of all the choices, that was the one that offered me that. And so that's the way that I went.
So you started writing music. Did you get like a deal or something?
No, I didn't get a deal. But I would say what it did was, because I told y'all about that meeting I went to and that crew started. So this crew starts in 1995. By the next summer, 1996, I was outside like that. What pushed me out there was I had a situation that happened in school, so I wasn't going to graduate on time. And so I really kind of got disenfranchised with school because I knew no matter what I did, I wasn't going to graduate on time in high school. And so I stopped going to school. And my mom didn't get on my grass too much or nothing like that. But one day she got a call from social services, because she's on welfare, and they tell my mother, hey, we got a report from the school that your son has missed so many days, and by law, before the school drop him, he got so many days he can miss in a row. And because you get public assistance, if you don't get him back in school,
she can get in trouble.
Then we'll have to take him off of your case.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm turning 18. And at that time, if you're going to be that age and stay on your mother's case, at least in New York State, whatever the rules are, they are. And I'll never forget, I came home that night and she sat me down and she said, look, son, I got this call, these letters coming in the mail and stuff. And she said, you at the age where you can make this decision for yourself, but I want you to, I would hope you would go back to school. But if you don't understand that, as far as at home, this is what the blah, blah, blah. And I understood what that meant. And from that day, I told my mom, I said, it's all good, Mom. I said, Mom, I'm not going to go back there. I said, I'm just too embarrassed to walk in the doors. I said, but don't worry about it. You ain't got to feed me no more. And from that time, bro, it was on. And me and my man, we borrowed. Because all we was just rapping weed heads. You know what I'm saying? 17 going on 18. Me and my man borrowed $60 from a friend of ours. I told him, yo, if you let us hold about $60, we'll give you back $100. He was like, that's what's up. I said, I'll give it back to you Friday. We went and brought a half ounce of weed, bagged it up, and the rest is history. And within probably 6 months, I had the biggest weed house on the west side of Buffalo. And then about 3 months after that, we got a second one. And now, because that's growing so fast, things were happening real quick, and it was just me and him. And you outnumbered, and you see people coming around and things, you feel a certain way, you start to get paranoid. And so let's just say I went back. I'm on the west side of town, which is predominantly Hispanic and Italian at the time.
Oh, there's Mexicans in Buffalo?
No, Puerto Ricans is the Boricua. Boricua. Big. Yeah. Big on west side Buffalo. Bapo. Puerto Rico, little Puerto Rico at that time. And Italians.
Bro, you know what happens to me, bro? When I hang around with Puerto Ricans, I start speaking like them, bro, by accident. Because Latinos be coming out, I'm like, all of a sudden, hey, papo.
Hey, pa.
Hey, pa.
Hey, but you know, and the only reason we was on that side of town is because, once again, my mother wasn't able to always stay in a place for years. Mm. So the last time we lived on the east side, that was early 96. So she's moving. And she's like, baby, I'm moving to the west side. I'm like, the west? Yo, you can be in Buffalo, and if you from East Buffalo, unless you really just, like, know a girl or got family on, you don't go west. Because no Puerto Ricans ain't playing over there. And they don't come over here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But if she's living there, whenever I'll stay my welcome being with friends, and they mom like, your friends gotta go. I get to go to mom house. When she moved over there, it was on and popping. It got cracking. And it grew really fast. And so I went back to East Buffalo and convinced about 6 or 7 guys, hey, man, we getting money over here. Come get some money. Like, what? I'm like, yo, bro, it's like that. Just come for a week and see what's up. And I started a crew. We was about 13 deep over there. And I had a good run for almost 3 years. And also near the end of that 3-year run, I actually met my wife at the time. I didn't know I met my wife.
Yeah.
But right near the end of that run, I met her. I was about 21 years old, going on 22. I was getting money, and I'm not selling tickets. If she was somebody, if y'all was interviewing her, she could tell y'all, oh, yeah, when I moved in the middle of that block, at the corner of that block, it was him and who he was with and what they was doing. And that's just what it was, bro. And so that, along with the music, propelled me throughout the city. Anywhere I go, they know what's up. Oh, them the boys who run them operations on the west side, and they a part of upstate. Anywhere we show up, any club, any event, we are the Buffalo version of the Wu-Tang Clan. It's 9-5, 9-6, 9-7, 9-8. I was the first rapper in Buffalo to put out a compact disc, meaning we were going from cassettes to CDs, and I was the first rapper to put out a solo album as a rapper on compact disc. And at that time, was with my man DJ Shay. May he rest in peace. He was one of the people who helped produce the sound that became known from my city. Because right now, out of my city, there's a movement that got big, especially over the last 5 years. And now they're known all over the world, called Griselda. And those guys actually started out with the same producers that I was running with back in 97. So, yo, all of that went around. And I'm going to say it was the summer. It was 96. I went with my guy, and we was going to some of his mans. He took me to some of his guys, and we up in there getting what we getting. And as we sitting around and they doing what they doing, this was amazing. These guys are up in this spot talking about the Bible. Now, I'm going to let y'all know, y'all may have heard of this. Guys go to prison and stuff like that. Mm. You got guys who come out of prison with religion.
Yeah.
But a lot of them come back to the community with this religious thing on them, but they still criminal. They getting right back to moving weight and doing this, that, and the third, but he became a Muslim while he was locked up. He took his Shahada in jail. Or your one man come out and he on some Pan-Africanist stuff. So in upstate New York in the 90s, because downstate New York, Philadelphia, people from that area, D.C., Baltimore, Maryland, knowledge itself is big up there. And hip hop, that's where I'm from, the birthplace of hip hop, if you will. Yeah. So the rappers like Rakim, the Poor Righteous Teachers, X-Clan, Public Enemy, KRS-One, these guys, many people may not know, were giving you a lot of religion, yeah, and black consciousness in their music and a lot of black politics and activism stuff. We ate that stuff up. So we had the oxymoronic position of, We sell drugs. Gunfights can happen. People can lose their lives. But within that environment, we still talk about the purpose for life. We still talk about knowledge itself. You plug in work from a drug dealer whose name is knowledge. Because he's part of the 5% nation of the gods and herbs. And in the midst of all of that, I met a group of guys who was like, men not, we not God. Black men not God. It's only one God. That's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Ooh.
And his son, Jesus Christ.
Like, what?
That's weird. Because I'm like, well, how you know that? It said it's in the Bible. That caught me. Because the Bible,
that's what my grandmother and them.
There it is. There's that seed, bro.
But bro, that was weird to me because that's not what nobody talking about in the streets. And in the music, hip hop not talking Jesus and the church is talking black power, Islam, wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, which is like what the Wu-Tang and all of them come up out of, you know, the 5% stuff. Yeah. Nobody in hip hop is talking Jesus Christ and the Bible, but these dudes in my hood was talking that. And it intrigued me because the only thing I understood about the Bible is that my grandmother and them older people and church folk deal with that. And I was like, the Bible? And he said, yeah. He said, yo, so you know anything about the Bible?
My pride. I was like, yeah.
He said, so I can ask you a couple questions. I was like, yeah,
I'm in the Bible.
I couldn't answer one.
I'm in the Bible.
Question he asked me. And he was like, but yo, you want to know where that's at?
Right here. And he took me to whatever book and showed me where it was written.
Shout out to that drug dealer, bro.
I was,
shared the gospel to
I was floored. That man said, yo, you got a Bible?
Oh, said, man. No.
He said, you want one?
Oh, man.
I said, yeah. And he gave me one. He went in the cabinet and had like a stack of Bibles in there. And he gave me one. And from that night, every night when I went home, I read the Bible. No matter what I was doing, I read the whole Bible in 7 months, bro, at the age of 19. I didn't understand it.
Right.
But I know I read it from Genesis 1 to Revelation 22. I didn't know it at the time, but I was caught. God, he came and took what's his. I didn't give my life to Christ. I surrendered to Christ because just it, how can we claim to give what belongs to him? That's like me saying, I give my existence to God. No, he gave me my existence.
Facts.
All of us in here right now, we're only alive because what he set forth with the first man and woman, our parents being made in that image and likeness, they did what human beings do. And God's creation continues to do what he set it forth to do. So if we can't claim our existence and us being responsible for it, how is it that we would claim responsibility for eternal life? We can. It's just God catches us the same way a fish never jumped out the ocean into somebody's bucket. No, he was caught. He caught me.
Yeah.
Just like he caught y'all. I didn't know it at the time, but he slowly started to show me. And I'm just thankful that in the midst of all of that, I'm selling a lot of drugs. I'm running around as a fornicator. If I got to, I'll lie, whatever I need to do in life. But I'm young and stupid. And we got good and evil in us, bro. And so while we're thinking of, because I'm not a heartless dude, I'm the dude who would use my power like this. Yo, why did y'all jump him? Y'all jump, this dude ain't from around here. He just walking from the store up the block and y'all just wanted to be on something today. So y'all seen somebody who ain't from around here and went and did something to him. Yo, don't do nothing like that over here no more. You do something like that, I'm going to do something to you. That's me. Other than that, I'm not involved in nothing. Right. But I don't like bullies because I've been bullied. So once I insulate myself as the leader of a drug crew, I'm still not going to bully you from my crew. But if I see something I don't like, I'm going to talk to you about it. And that's something that I've always had. And it done got me punched in the face a couple times in my youth. Because I'm not going to stand down because it was just me. And I was told, if I just let you beat me to a pulp, everybody going to try to beat me to a pulp. And so I guess from childhood having that, it was what it was. And by God's grace, he used what I had, bro, just like he used you. And he used you. whatever it is that he allowed us to be conditioned in our sinful nature, he's seen some value in us to bring us to himself and then take that thing we have and refine it and use it for him. Paul was on the road to Damascus with papers from the high priest and them to go into Syria, and any Jews they could catch who was preaching Christ, arrest them and bring them back to Jerusalem. Blinded him, healed his eyes, and then put him back on the road. But for him.
Ooh.
You're.
Bro, we're running out of time again, man.
What? No.
We always run out of time.
Hey, it's all good. I said, I guess, whatever the Lord wanted me to say today.
Yeah, bet.
Anything else I need to answer?
Nah, just if you can touch some real quick, because we're going to go to the finishing.
We do the five Yastas questions at the end. Okay. They're super random.
Okay.
They're funny.
All right.
But, do you have a question?
Just on the whole Black Israelite thing.
Okay.
You know, if you can just touch like super briefly, like a couple minutes.
Interestingly enough, my name Zadok comes from the Bible. You know, it comes from the guy who, the son of Aaron, who stayed on David's side and made sure Solomon got the throne.
Yeah.
When his brother Abiathar was back in Adonijah, David's other son. 1996, the same homie house. Now that I'm reading the Bible, I go over there and build with these guys all the time. And so
you guys are having Bible study now?
Yeah. Hey, bro, I used to have Bible studies at the trap on the porch.
That's fire, bro.
Maybe 15 deep.
I was thinking right now when you were saying, hey, man, I went to the Connect's house. I bought, and then he prayed for me on my way out.
You know what I mean? I was thinking, like that's fire, bro. He's like, God, let me pray for you. Let me pray for you before you leave. Hey, I'm not to be funny, but